is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one only unofficial UK Seahawkers podcast. We are back to cover everything that happened over a pretty busy weekend, if you stretch out a pretty busy 6 or 7 days for the Seahawks off the field as well as on the stage down in Nashville, Tennessee, for the draft extravaganza. But before we get all the draft stuff, myself, Stuart Court, is joined as ever by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I am very well, thank you. I'm delighted to see that the Seahawks now have, I think, 24 players on the roster. So we're edging up to that magic number 90. So we just need, 66 more undrafted free agents. And we've got a team for camp, so we're going well.
Yeah, not too bad. But obviously, before we get and go through all the picks and trades, because there were a lot of them on over the weekend in Nashville, we will go back to about, an hour and a half after we released last week's podcast, Adam, and the news that Frank Clark was no longer a Seattle Seahawk and had been traded to the Kansas City Chiefs. As we said, it was announced mere hours after we posted our previous pod, which is slightly annoying, but the haul was not, Adam. The Chiefs traded a 2019 first round, a 2020 second, and the team swapped third round picks for the 2019 draft. And Clark then got his bag, as the phrase goes, signing a 5-year, $105 million deal with the Chiefs, which pays Clark over $60 million in guarantees. We touched on it briefly last week, and it kind of seemed it was coming at some point that week. We didn't probably expect it as sharply as it come round, but it wasn't much of a surprise, really, was it?
No, I guess it was one of those things that was always going to happen before the draft. And, well done, Frank Clark, for getting his money. But overall, if you look at what the Chiefs have given up in terms of picks and cap space, this is like one of the biggest no-brainers, like massive win for the Seahawks that they've had for a long, long time. As much as some people view the Percy Harvin trade as a loss, I would say this is an equal win for the team. It's just, it all really has come up trumps for the team this time around, I'd say.
Yeah, your mic's went in the water again.
Oh, no. Still?
No. It'll be fine. It was only like the last few seconds of that. But yeah, no, the haul is, I think that was the most surprising part of it, wasn't it? Because obviously they set themselves up for this weekend. They've added another pick on top of all the compensatory picks they had. They seem in line to get for next year as well. And then also, they just freed up the target for extensions on other players, didn't they?
Yeah, you kind of wonder why, if the Chiefs were going to give up their first pick, they didn't wait for the draft to come round. Like, what was the rush for them to do it? Unless they were so terrified about someone else nipping in. But, like, the Jets were never going to give up the third overall pick for Frank Clark. So you kind of wonder why the Chiefs didn't, trade down from 29... let's say 36 for the sake of argument, give up 36, which the Seahawks probably would have taken on the night of the first round, and then had like a second and third round pick that you've got to trade back as well. So it does strike me as a little bit confusing how readily the Chiefs gave up what they did, but maybe they think Clark is going to be some kind of transcendent player, and maybe he will. But overall, I don't. There's not one bit of me that thinks I'd rather have Frank Clark than what I got in return, especially when you look at what the team did with those picks on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Jets, I think they would have been in the reckoning if they could have moved back from three, but at the same time, I think they came out with arguably the best player in the draft in Quinnen Williams at number three. Apparently, they did want to move back and take him a bit later, but the phone didn't ring. So I think this is the best case scenario for the team getting, for the Seahawks getting what they got, quite clearly looking at his pay. It's the best for Frank Clark because it appears that the Seahawks were, as we mentioned, I think about a year ago with Frank Clark, they were looking at Danielle Hunter-type money for Frank Clark, and clearly it's his prerogative that he wasn't going to settle for what was $70 million over 5 years, which is, I think, what Hunter got from the Vikings 15, 18 months ago. But yeah, so it all kind of came up trumps before with all that. Frank Clark is now Kansas City Chiefs. The team headed into the draft then with an extra first-round pick. The first time they had two first-round picks moved into the draft weekend since the first John Schneider, Pete Carroll draft back in 2010 when they come out of it with Earl Thomas and Russell Okung. But before we get to draft news, it seems to be given some added ratification this weekend, something which has kind of been rumoured for the last couple of weeks and bummed out most of the fan base. On Friday, Adam Schefter from ESPN reported that Doug Baldwin has probably played his last NFL down. Schefter tweeted, at the age of 30, Seahawks wide receiver Doug Baldwin might be unable to play again due to the cumulative effect of multiple injuries, per sources. There is a real chance that Baldwin, one of the Seahawks' best and most popular players, has played his last NFL down. John and Pete were asked about it after they made three picks on Friday night, and here's what they said on what they weren't really going to say.
They didn't really weigh in. We know Doug's going to have a hard time. You know, there's a process we need to go through with Doug. But you know, at that point with DK, that didn't really weigh in. But I mean, you know, there's still several doggone good receivers on the board, so we're going to work our way through that.
Has Doug expressed to you that he's going to retire?
Considering it, yeah, but there's a process to go through with that.
How recently did he express that?
None of your friggin' business. Yeah. No. Sorry. We just can't get into it, really.
Yeah, I'll take the opportunity to say that he has been an extraordinary part of this program since we've been here, and he has given us everything he has had. Been a great competitor, a good player and all that, and we believe in him so much and trust in him so much that wherever this goes, we're going to support him forever. And, he's been a great contributor in so many ways, and not just on the team, but in the community and everything else he's done. He's been awesome. So we'll see what happens, and he's working through it, and we're going to follow Doug on this one.
Yeah.
We'll
trust us. This is a process. Yeah. We're trying to respect Doug as much as we can.
Has he still been in the facility working?
Yep.
Yeah, he's been rehabbing here.
Rehabbing the crazy.
Can you say what the most specific issue is? Or, I mean, he's had several different surgeries?
No, I mean, there's just when you get to this point, he's at a point in his career where he's considering a lot of things. And once you get there, there's a lot of different ways. You don't just... There's stuff with the league office, with the union that we need to work through with him.
You wrote him a letter before you guys picked him up.
Yeah.
Just saying all the potential that he had, what he can do.
Yeah.
Don't worry about being undrafted all this time later.
Yeah.
It seems like he's been done to all of that.
Yeah, that was the lockout year, so.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I had time to actually sit there and write him a letter. He We told him we weren't going to re-sign Brandon Stokley, and told him that he was going to compete with I apologize, I can't remember who else the player was at the time, but that he would.
There was a lot of guys coming through at the time.
He would have an opportunity to compete, and he'd be a phenomenal slot receiver for us. Instant separation, really quick eyes, really quick hands, and he was super tough. Did a great job on special teams for us right away. He was just his alpha style, he was amazing.
So even though at this point it's a pretty unsurprising revelation, because there's been a lot of smoke and the fire almost seemed to be around the corner, but this one is still one which is pretty damn good for us, especially given the tone and terms like process and leave it to him to decide how we do this. Doug appears finished, and it sucks, doesn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the way in which it's reported, the lack of tweets that you might expect from someone like Baldwin to deny it, and then, as you say, the talk about the process, it kind of strikes me as a, how do we retire, in which case to get the best for the, you know, myself, and, you know, in sort of the way that Cam Chancellor has semi-retired without actually ever being fully retired. It's gutting. It's one of those that I'm trying not even to think about, because he's my favourite ever Seahawk, I think. Yeah, he is. And it's just a real shame to see a player go out on their own, not on their own terms. Like, there's so many nice ways that, you know, if you are going to end your career, you can be substituted off before the final play of the last home season game, and, you know, get your standing ovation. And, you know, in the same way that Earl Thomas left on a cart, Sherman left on a cart, Chancellor walked off in Arizona. You know, there's not been, of all of these legendary Seahawk players, not one of them has had the ending really that you would have dreamed up for them. And that just is, just feels like such a shame.
It is, as I tweet, he's, Doug Bowman's one of my all-time favourite, I think, sports stars, if that's the right phrase to use. He's not just because he played for my team. I think if I looked from the outside in, a few of my mates who are other teams equally kind of hold him to a pretty high regard, just how he conducts himself. But yeah, it would and is going to suck. For Doug, though, if this is it, he finished his career with 493 catches, which is third in franchise history, 6,563 yards, which is also third in franchise history, 49 touchdowns, which only is behind Steve Largent for the Seahawks, and over 50 yards per game average is pretty damn good for a guy who was forgotten somewhat in college and was an undrafted free agent back in 2011 who broke records for the team. And while a cliche, some broke molds whilst he was in Seattle. Only 19-7 of those offensive players have played more games as a Seahawk than Doug Baldwin. His name will be up circling the 200 level at the CenturyLink Field soon enough, won't it, Adam?
You'd think so. I mean, one of the problems with having such a transcendent era is that there's so many players that could feasibly be Ring of Honor that, you know, some people unfortunately are going to have to miss out. But you'd hope that he wouldn't be one. I think, yeah, just his attitude, he's such a leader. I feel like he was such an important part of the Seahawk team that I think, yeah, he needs to be. I mean, even thinking back to someone like Super Bowl 48, in which he scored a touchdown, but actually his beating of Champ Bailey on the outside in the first quarter for me was, that was probably the moment that I realized that we were going to win, or that at least we, if I wouldn't allow myself to think that, but that we were better. And I, you know, seeing a move like that on such a legend from someone like Baldwin, who's, you know, the epitome of the Seahawk way at that time. I don't know. It kind of felt like such an important moment in that game. And I mean, he's just got, you know, tons of moments. His YouTube compilation at the end of his career would be probably one of the most enjoyable you could ever wish to watch. And it's really shit. And you know, you hope that it's not going to be the way it's going to be. But I think if you were to read the tea leaves appropriately, there's a suggestion of which it's only going one way, really.
So I think Mike Dugal said everything about Doug Baldwin the last few months has just been negative. There hasn't been anything positive around Doug Baldwin for a few months. And it is kind of sad, and the symmetry, as you said earlier, about how every one of these players who are part of the most successful era in this team's history have all gone out in a pretty, not under a bit of a cloud in different contexts as well. I think his name should be up there. I'm interested to see what his next step will be. I would not be surprised if Baldwin could be somewhat of a Chancellor type figure, how Chancellor was quite prominent on the sideline at VMAC in a few games last year. I would not be surprised, with especially how the Seahawks attack the draft and the players they've brought in, if Doug Baldwin is a constant or consistent presence at VMAC and around the team in the lead up and through the 2019 season. So back on the draft though, with that extra Frank Clark pick, the draft began, as we say, with the Seahawks having the uncommon means of two first round picks. With that, when they eventually come on the clock with the 21st pick, we heard a phrase which would come up a lot over the working weekend. The Seahawks, though, finally made a pick at 29, and it was somewhat of a surprise to some, considering who was still on the board and how heralded the position was. The Seahawks selected Al J. Collier, a defensive end, defensive lineman from TCU. Collier is 6'2", 280 pounds, and is a solid piece to add.
With the 29th pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Seattle Seahawks select LJ Collier, defensive end, TCU.
LJ fits us. I mean, he's a heavy-handed, tough, you know, chip on his shoulder guy that, you know, he lost his mother when he was a freshman in college, and he didn't play well in the game that she saw, in the last game that she saw. And he's always used that, you know, to his advantage.
He's going to play five technique for us, and we'll move. He's very flexible; he can move around. The guy I saw the name on pop on the TV that he's a lot like Michael Bennett. He has the versatility and the style and the penetration ability. He's really slippery. Terrific pass rush makeup, and so we're going to fit him right into the scheme in that.
Daniel Jeremiah and Charles Davis compared him. His game with how he can get through offensive lines to Michael Bennett, and it's something that Pete Carroll echoed at the end of the first round, I think, and maybe on Saturday night as well. Thoughts on Collier and the pick and position, Adam?
Look, I mean, I can't pretend to say that I know anywhere near as much about these college players as you do, but it was probably obvious they were going to go defensive end with their yeah. first pick. Watching the guys' highlights and whatever, there is that Bennett-y-ness of the way he plays, that it's a bit kind of more slippery than it is pounding, and he managed to, you know, squeeze in between gaps between players and get around guys with speed to the quarterback, which is really fun to watch, actually. And I think from all accounts, it seems like the team were fairly surprised with how the first round went, and I wonder if they might think maybe we should have taken our guy at 21 and traded 29 as opposed to the other way around. The post-round interview suggested like they thought more would be there at 29 than there was, and they kind of took Collier because they had to, not because I don't think that they think he's a good player, but it just suggested to me that they weren't entirely happy with the way that day one happened. But I don't know what you think of that.
No, the whole vibe in that press conference is kind of, it's like shell shock. It's really strange compared to how day two and especially day three are, how jacked up, particularly as he always is, John Schneider is around draft weekend. The whole vibe from that first day's interview was very strange. And it might be just one of your guys, but the fact that the Chargers took Jerry Tillery at 28 or 27 kind of looms large, because he would be that incisive interior guy that RJ Collier appears to be. But there's a word which we're going to hear when we talk about a lot of these draft picks over the weekend, and that's aggressive. And that, when you watch Collier, he really is aggressive. He's not someone he's not going to do what Frank Clyde did and just beat you off the snap with just that first step and kind of thing. He's just going to make those 4 or 5 seconds you're trying to block him unpleasant as can be, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going to make his opposing players' afternoons and evenings just miserable. I don't know, is 280 on the light side for someone playing in that position? What did Michael Bennett play at?
I have no earthly idea. It sounds stockier than Michael Bennett was, but obviously... But I just think, along with aggressive, there's the word versatile seems to come up with a lot of these guys. I'm going to get onto that a bit later.
He actually, now I think about it, is almost more Averill reminding me than Bennett in the way in which he attacks the quarterback. I don't know if you think that's a fair comparison or not.
The way he attacks the quarterback once he gets past the airline is kind of definitely more Averill-y. He seems to really enjoy that SWAT, which Cliff Averill made famous. Michael Bennett is listed on NFL.com at 274, 6'4".
Yeah,
so it's somewhere like a hybrid of those two players. But I think just that ferocity, where he's so heavy handed, he kind of it would not be pleasant to take a punch from RJ Collier, and he's all his power kind of is in that upper body area. I think it kind of fits with how adept and how well Michael Bennett uses his hands, and that kind of is what they kind of want from their five tech, and going back a couple of years, it's kind of what they went looking for with Malik McDowell. I don't as straight away as it was with McDowell a couple of years ago, Calais Campbell's name come up in conversation with John Schneider, Adam.
Yeah, 100%. That seems like a very safe and fair comparison to make whilst you quietly die in the background.
Yeah, day two and another trade back because that's what they do. And then a new, different enforcer emerged from the Pac-12 in the defensive backfield. Utah safety Marquise Blair. Boy, oh boy, is he aggressive. And here is what they said on the new safety from, as I said, Utah.
We'd like to start him at safety and inside, knowing that there's other things that he may be able to do, but try to zero him in. We really like him attacking the line of scrimmage. He blitzes well, tackles well, hits well, great feel. It's his toughness that we really are excited about. He happens to be a really good athlete as well. But we're going to zero him in to make it, focused for him as he starts out at strong safety.
But yeah, Marquise Blair, Adam, there's a few hits and tackles he makes. He is somewhat in disregard of his body and how he's going to feel when he stops playing, but oof. he sure can lay the hits out, which is something which appeared to be missing somewhat from that defensive backfield and certain people in that backfield.
Yeah, you don't seem to see many players that play like that anymore. There's the kind of JR or Jim Ross, no regard for human life kind of commentary clip. The kind of, he seems to have that element about how he plays. And now, he's not the biggest. Is he 5'9"? Is that right?
He's 6'2".
That was a later defensive back we took. I apologize. That was Amadi, I think, from Oregon, on the shorter side. Look, 6'2" and a hitter. That you would naturally think Cam Chancellor seems like a fair comparison to that. That might be slightly reductive and probably won't play like that, but certainly a position that I think we all thought we needed to fill, that extra body at safety. And we've seen, with the way in which Carroll picks his plays his team, that the defensive backs can be the leader of the whole defense. So it would be great to see that with another, hard hitter in the back.
Yeah, he only really played, he's only a 2-year contributor for Utah. He did not play at all per his stats on the Utah website, but he had two interceptions, so he's not one of those. I think the only reason they drafted Tedrick Thompson is because he had quite a few interceptions. That seems to have gone to the wayside, which is similar with other positions they drafted this year, that they draft certain positions. But he seems to be around the play a hell of a lot, and when he is, he's the one making there's a couple of clips, just the same with Collier. There's one where he kind of tackles Collier, tackles someone with his kind of like shoulder, and as the running back's in midair, and the midair just goes, the running back goes completely flying. There's a few of them from Marquise Blair. So as we'll get onto a bit later with Amadi, it kind of feels like they're doing and setting things up a bit differently in that defensive secondary. I said to a few guys over the weekend, the Earl Thomas center field style, where that's where you play and everyone else plays around, it doesn't seem to be their approach and how the secondary is going to set up, especially in the middle portion of the field, Adam.
Well, like the one of the biggest compliments I could pay Earl Thomas is that on basically every passing play, when it came to an end, he was somewhere on the screen. And that's kind of what you want from that safety. So you want your someone just to be flying after the ball at all times and just disrupting things. So, yeah, I think in that sense, it was a position of need. And it seems like we've done incredibly well to get it.
Yeah, so Marquise Blair, though, does have a few things which you'd hope will be coached out of him. He only finished his collegiate career with 2 interceptions, but he did have 3 ejections on his CV. So you'd hope with the how well Pete Carroll coaches up defensive backs, especially, he kind of is eradicated, and we have the molded version of Marquise Blair, isn't it, Adam?
Here's hoping. I mean, you can ejections, I guess, over a 2-3 year career. I mean, it's not something you can necessarily equate to
ill-disciplined to that degree. I mean, the hands, you would suggest, two interceptions, not ideal. But I always feel like Seahawks safeties have a habit of like running into each other, and either of them could have an easy interception, but the two of them tackle each other and no one gets the pick. You know, so it feels like they'll fit right in straight away, actually, if that's the case.
Yeah, so after Marquise Blair, and after two trade backs over the first 50 or so picks, the Seahawks did a rare thing and traded up to stop the ball of the 3% body fat specimen named DK Metcalf, which gave us this incredible phone call from the team to the Ole Miss wide receiver.
Hello.
DK.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's John Schneider with the Seattle Seahawks.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, bud?
You good?
You doing all right?
Yes, sir.
Hey,
yes,
man,
sir.
Get fired up. We're going to make you a Seahawk right here, okay? You all right, bud? All right, man, congratulations.
Thank you.
You got to help me out in the weight room, though. I'm a little slow in that area, okay? Yeah. All right, look forward to this, brother, okay? Here's Coach Carroll.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
DK! Hey, DK, this is Coach Pete Carroll.
How you doing?
I'm doing really good. Okay, we'll both cry together then, all right?
Why y'all wait this long, man?
I know you had to wait a little bit, but that doesn't matter because you're coming to Seattle, man. You're going to play with the Seahawks, and you're going to catch footballs from Russell Wilson. So get your ass ready to go, big fella. We are fired up for it.
He's equipped to do a lot of stuff, not just the stuff that he can do in the throwing game, but in the running game too. He's going to be a big factor for us, the team that loves to run the football. He's going to be a factor, and he's going to be able to help us in the play-action game. He releases off the line of scrimmage with great violence. I mean, he's one of the great starters in the draft. You know, he ran 1.46 or something in his 10, which is an amazing time, not to mention how big he is. And his feet can move and fire, so that we know that he can do a lot of stuff. We're anxious to really fit him into the whole play-action game and all the things we love doing and just find out where it fits for him. We want to use his speed, running, get him down the field, and threaten the defense in ways that will really complement the rest of our guys.
So, yeah, DK Metcalf is not someone I expected or kind of held my hat on coming out of this draft with, but at 64, a guy who was top 5, top 10, number 1 receiver for most of the draft process, despite being pretty average in a pretty average team, admittedly, in Mississippi, that DK Metcalf is a Seattle Seahawk, and he's quite unlike the receivers they had on the roster before they made the selection of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were fairly anti this, if I'm not mistaken, kind of Thursday, Friday. So,
yeah.
And I'm not saying you're wrong to be. You know, any draft pick can be either good or bad. So what were your initial reservations going into it?
My main reservation was that people wanted him at 31. If they'd have drafted him at 31, I'm unsure of how good he is. He's not a very, I've said with other players, he's not a very versatile wide receiver. He didn't have massive production. I think AJ Brown, his teammate at Mississippi, rightly went things like 15 picks. He went just after Marquise Blair, about 15, 16 picks before him. He is a better pro prospect. But the thing with DK Metcalf is the one thing he can do incredibly well is the one thing we've seen over the last 7-8 years of Russell Wilson. He can do well as well as very few of the quarterbacks in this league, and that's throw the deep red line, deep ball down 30, 40 yards down the sideline with just the receiver just running in a straight line and just beating his defensive back for power and just long speed. He's not who I really wanted out of this draft, but at 64, what they gave up and what they got before DK Metcalf kind of soothed it somewhat. And I think the fact he is good at that go route and he can go and get the deep ball, which he did with Jordan Tamu at Mississippi, is kind of encouraging when you see how incredible Russell Wilson is at that deep ball. So it is a kind of a nice fit in that way. But the clamour for him for 31 and whatever number pick Marquise Blair was firstly annoying and secondly kind of a bit above his station, I think. I think 64, where he kind of went with Hakeem Butler going a couple of rounds later, is kind of where it was kind of like the ceiling of where I would kind of be a bit more okay with taking them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't expect every wide receiver to be as good as someone like Kevin Norwood, the all-time greatest.
Exactly.
One of my heroes. Or even, you know, Chris Matthews having a game like he did. But let's go against something that we've said for many a year on this pod. Let's assume that the other fans of the team are right and that Jimmy Graham was shit in his last year. Let's go with that. He still managed to score 10 touchdowns because the quarterback is so good. And if you can just have a guy that can be such a mismatch in the red zone, even if he just gives you that, you know, that would be an enormous upgrade on what we had last year, I think we scored a lot of our touchdowns from scheme in the red zone last year, as opposed to just one guy going out and beating someone else. It was more kind of the routes that were run and a bit of misdirection. Brandon Marshall had a couple of catches against Dallas, I think it was, and then completely fell off. So it was a position that we probably did miss a little bit from week four onwards last year. So if he can provide that physicality and the big, you know, the much heralded Sidney Rice replacement that every Seahawk fan's been wishing we had for the last 6 years, then I guess it'll be fantastic.
He's different to Sidney Rice. Sidney Rice was kind of a lot more close to the Doug Baldwin type. DK Metcalf is Mike Williams. He has the look of what T.O. did back in his San Francisco, mm-hmm. Dallas days, Philadelphia days. He has that look. He just does not yet and didn't have the collegiate production, which is a massive thing for the Seahawks, it appears. Because, DK Metcalf up Mississippi on what was admittedly meh team, despite all the weapons that the offense had with A.J. Brown, DeMarcus Hodge, I think, who actually went and drafted a couple of decent running backs as well. He only had 14 touchdowns in college. The other two receivers, which we'll get onto in a bit, the Seahawks took in on day three, they had more than 14 touchdowns last season. So production is clearly a big thing for the Seahawks when they're looking at this position and offensive players. But Metcalf is kind of the makeup of the player. You kind of hope that the production catches up eventually. I think that's kind of why at 64 kind of felt the sweet spot for him and kind of why I was okay with him. But my main problem was everyone clamoring for him at 31 and whatever number pick we took, then trading back from 37 and everything, and then eventually taking him at 64. The value is a lot more palatable than it could have been.
That's fair. And I think you're right when you talk about he's a different player to Sidney Rice. But when you hear people generally say they've lacked that Sidney Rice replacement, I kind of feel that fans just mean a large human being to catch high balls.
DK Metcalf, 3% body fat. He ran a 4.3 40. He can't turn corners very quickly, which I think is another thing we have with one of the day three picks at wide receiver. But 4.3 40 at 6'4". 230 odd pounds is just incredible, really. So if he, like I say, if the production kind of catches up with the specimen, the Seahawks have a problem for the NFC West, don't they, Adam?
Yeah, and also this isn't necessarily what matters when it comes to analysis and analytics, but it just feels a bit fun to have, potentially thrilling. You look at all these other teams, like the way in which the Steelers draft wide receivers every year, like they get Juju and players like that, and you think, why can't the Seahawks ever have something like that? Like, I don't think we've ever picked a non-guard in the first seven rounds of a draft, is kind of how I view it. And like, this is for the first time for a while. I know people will say Penny, but even Penny, like the running back thing, you can talk about till the cows come home, the importance of that. But I don't know, the passing game is the funnest thing to watch for me, and to have just this massive human being catching passes potentially for you. I don't know. I'm excited by it, and so I'm looking forward to seeing how it all works out.
There is that. I think if you watch, I haven't seen the ESPN. I watched obviously NFL Network with our broadcast service Sky Sports showing them. But Daniel Jeremiah's reaction, I think Charles Davis's reaction to the pick was kind of like, here we go, Russell Wilson. You kind of got the excitement from observers and people who were obviously pretty down the middle of the road for most picks. But you can see how juice they were about the possibilities of that thing, and that kind of thing that kind of transferred to a lot of the fan base. But again, it is weird to have a bit of fun in the draft because it could be quite mundane, as it probably was at some point on day three. But yeah, DK Metcalf is a Seattle Seahawk, and for the most part, the last 4 months since the season ended and all the combine and all the rest of it, it that seemed like a very distinct impossibility. So it is, as you say, it is a bit of, it's fun that he's actually ended up on our team, Adam. The team ended day two with another Utah Oot coming from the Pac-12 in linebacker Cody Barton.
Versatility, size 6'6", 2.5". He can play all three spots. Has always been a phenomenal special teams player. I mean, the guy's really intense, loves football. You know, he's got true grit to him. His parents were both, his dad was drafted by the Blue Jays, and, you know, his mom was a big-time basketball player at Utah. And, yeah, so we got the two Utes.
And to be quite honest, I haven't watched much, if anything, of him, but he seems someone who is going to add some pretty prominent and important depth to that linebacker position, Adam.
This is the one pick that I think I just completely missed because I was in the middle of work or something and I had absolutely no idea who this guy was. I remember every other name from the draft, but I just didn't. This pick just did not resonate with me whatsoever. And I can only apologize, Cody, as you enter your Hall of Fame 18-year linebacker Ray Lewis style career. this will kind of, they'll play this at your Hall of Fame ceremony. So yeah, let's not pretend that we know too much about this, but linebacker depth was always going to be a potential issue with the crook and the croc coming into the season. So it was obviously a massive position of need, and they addressed it twice in the draft, obviously. So again, another pick that seemed, if you look at what the roster was going to need, very sensible.
Yeah, and a guy from Utah called Cody Barton is pretty is as humdrum as you could get, really, isn't it, in the NFL draft. Day three saw the team get to work with a couple more moves all around, up, down, backwards, sideways on the draft board and the proverbial shop. The team started their day of selections with someone who led the, at one point during last season, led all of college football with touchdowns. It was Gary Jennings, a wide receiver from West Virginia. Now,
he did a great job at the Senior Bowl. He was, he's the fastest guy, you know, on the GPS. They tracked him at 23 miles an hour. You know, Jim Nagy's running that now. That used to work for us, and he had the fastest speed of anybody at the Senior Bowl down there with a zebra timing. And phenomenal hands, really strong after the catch.
The DK Metcalf pick came before, I think, the Adam Schefter tweet. Definitely came before the comments, obviously, from Schneider and Carroll on the cloudy or not too long-lived playing career future of Doug Baldwin, whereas this pick came 20 hours after all that. And this kind of feels like replacing like for like somewhat, Adam, because Gary Jennings did spend a hell of a lot of time in the slot, but has a bit of another 6'2", 215 receiver. He kind of will add a different look again to that receiver core, won't it?
Yeah, that does seem to be certainly the meaning behind the pick. And if anything, the team, for all the stick and shit we gave them last year for being overly run-based, you can't say that they've drafted and spent the weekend with that in mind. Like what they've done really does look to have a real emphasis on the passing game. And Jennings, if he can get his hands sorted, although, I mean, he did have a 75%, I think, percent catch ratio last year.
Yeah.
You know, could be a really smart pick.
Yeah, and as I said, in opposite to DK Metcalf, Gary Jennings, in what is a pretty unique offense in West Virginia, obviously their quarterback is now in Carolina, Will Greer, the tight end, was well heralded, Trevon Wesco, and also I think David Sills was a pretty late draft pick on day three as well. So they've had players who appear to have NFL futures. Gary Jennings finished his collegiate career where he contributed somewhat over all 4 years from a freshman to a senior back in 2018. He finished his career with just under 2,300 yards and 17 touchdowns. And he also appears to be someone who could get the ball when and kickoffs and things like that, which kind of adds a different layer to what he can bring, and also adds what he could actually the chances he's going to do to be a contributor from week one against the Bengals.
Well, Lockett should be taken off special teams for two reasons. One, I would say because he's now looking like being our number one wide receiver, and two, because he's generally shite at both kick and punt returns. Maybe is that harsh? He scored one last year against Arizona, didn't he?
Yeah,
but I think overall it was a little bit Brian Walters last year. It was more Brian Walters than
rookie Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think there's two things that I think the rules have changed to make it impossible for Devin Hester. I think Devin Hester changed the rules himself. It kind of,
that's the name I was looking for. Really pissed me off.
How often he? I mean, he had like 13,000. Punt and kickoff returns in his NFL career. I think they kind of changed the rules for that, but also their entire special teams unit was just a bit shit for the last couple of years, and it's still somewhat of a surprise moving into this year that's the one position coach which has survived the great call of the Seahawks coaching staff over the last 18 months or so, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I think they made a point in their day three press conference of saying that every player they've drafted can be an immediate contributor on special teams. It feels like we talk about special teams more than any other team, their obsession with it.
Yeah.
Especially given how, as you say, the rules are being made that special teams is almost like I don't think you can realistically say that there are three equal parts of a game anymore. But they're obsessed with it, and you know, maybe that's so they can have a better point differential than they did last year.
Yeah. After also every player, we'll get into the second sixth round pick, the defensive tackle. I don't see him being on the special team kickoff thing because he's like 350 pounds. Anyway, after Gary Jennings, they added to the offensive line competition, and that word aggressive came up again with Wake Forest Phil Haynes, who appears to be a pretty strong, aggressive, and a bit of a mauler at left guard. He does have playing experience at three of the offensive line spots.
Phil is a guy that we targeted early because of his makeup and his style of play. You know, we're really excited about the way our guards have been playing, you know, and you saw us go out and get Mike Iapati to go along with what DJ has done. We thought early on that this is a guy that fit in the mold of that. He's going to be 340 pounds. He's really strong, he's really a physical guy, likes to finish blocks and knock guys down. He's got an attitude about him, and he just looked like he would fit the bill to compete with those guys. And so we have shifted gears in the last couple of years here, and this is an indication of that. It was really a guy that we had cited from early on, and John figured out where he would go, and we were able to nail it. But specifically because of his makeup that kind of matched up with the kind of guys that we're really having, we had some success with, and we're excited about.
Quite a DJ Fluka hair to the throne pick, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems, as you say, very versatile in position. I mean, what the hell does anyone know about fourth round offensive linemen and how they're going to be? It's a pretty hard one to accurately judge what they're going to do, but here's hoping he can be a fairly immediate contributor. And I guess you're more looking at Ethan Posich as a guy that's probably looking over his shoulder going into camp, wondering if I'm going to be on the team at the end of the year.
Completely forgotten. There was an interesting comment from Pete Carroll where they said over the last couple of years, they've kind of changed how they look at the position of offensive line, and kind of going off that, Haynes kind of jumped off the page. It kind of seems that they've kind of realised what a mistake it was keeping Tom Cable in the building for so long, Adam.
I mean, who would have assumed that guy was the all-time disaster, because no one else pointed it out.
Yeah, after Phil Haynes, they made a slightly strange pick in the fact that they actually bothered to look at the school at all, Adam. Ugo Amadi, I'm not saying his real first name because it's impossible for me to get out without looking like a complete prat.
Well, he's a very versatile football player, and he's, you know, recognized, you know, been awarded some stuff and recognition of being a really all around player. He's a safety. We're going to start him off playing back in the middle, playing free safety to start. Marquise will be at the other side, and he's done a lot of coverage stuff on the slots. He's done nickel work in a unique way and been effective there too. So.
For a defensive back, maybe candidate for the now open, what was Justin Coleman's spot at nickel cornerback, from the Oregon Ducks. He's on the small
side. Sorry, who?
He's on the small side for a Seahawks DB, but that kind of adds weight to the fact, despite what Pete Carroll said, they're going to start him out at safety. He just kind of, it would not be surprised if come the start of August, he's in a competition with Akeem King and Kalam Reed, I don't.
Well, it's such an important position in today's NFL, and you know, look at the money that Justin Coleman got. You can see the value that the team put on that position, and you know, even Byron Maxwell previously. It's obviously a position that the team value hugely. And yeah, I mean, you can't really see that there would be another position for a 5'9" defensive back on a Pete Carroll team than this. So that would seem to make perfect sense.
Yeah, unless your name's Earl Thomas. And then after Ugo Amadi, the tackling machine. Linebacker Ben Burke-Kervin, BBK.
You know, whenever you get a guy that's this active and has these kinds of numbers, you've got to take a look. And we took a really deep look at what Ben's all about. And he reminded me so much of Lofa Tatupu. And the Lofa had this extraordinary knack for finding the football in unique ways and the way he fit in the running game. He was amazing. Well, this is the way Ben plays. And so there was a... Our guys all, you know, latched onto him, and with the productivity, one has also got speed, and the special knack was really something we were excited about. We know he's going to be a factor on special teams.
Came down from Montlake to Renton as a Washington Huskies tackling machine. He went all was well heralded in 2018. This is the centerpiece, really, of Chris Peterson's defense the last couple of years. He is a pretty fun player to watch, and it kind of seems how. Effective, proficient, and how often he was on the stat sheet kind of is what caught the attention of Carroll and Schneider, Adam.
Yeah, you've got to love a tackle machine. They're just so fun to watch. Yeah. And you know, Bobby Wagner has contracts coming up. It would be miraculous. Well, not miraculous. It would be absolutely fantastic if BBK can be even half the player that Wagner's been, but I wonder if this is maybe a slight contingency, and also you'd imagine a serious special teams contributor. And again, it was a position in which we needed depth. And do you think he can only play in the middle, or could he play at one of the outside linebacker positions?
I think, as we really touched on with Amadi, I think, and same with BBK and Kelly Barton, it kind of seems with the two safeties they took, the two linebackers they took, and even some of the players they added in undrafted free agency, that the word versatile seems to be the thing. They want... I think as Mike Dugas wrote for The Athletic today, they kind of want their players, they want more Bradley McDougals than they want specialists in that on that defensive side of the ball. And that kind of seems to be what BBK, Amadi, Blair and Barton bring to the table, that they can just play more than one position. They're not going to have, okay, but this player's going to play here for the next 10 years. He's going to play here 50% of the game, and then here for the rest of the game. It kind of seems that's how they seem to approach it, which is quite interesting, seeing as how steadfast Pete Carroll has appeared in other facets of his coaching, Adam.
Yeah, it's it does feel like a very different draft just in general, doesn't it, to what we've seen.
Yeah.
In the Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll era, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the versatile and aggressive, and as you mentioned, how often special teams was mentioned as a key component of selecting these players is quite interesting. How they've gone about this draft, as we'll get into in a sec, is quite something. But also how they've selected the players and the reasons for it is quite. Maybe there is a change of foot, Adam. Maybe. After. BBK came Travis Homer, a running back from Miami, because this is not a Seahawks draft if they don't draft a running back.
He's really tough. He's only 20 years old. He's a grit guy for us. Hell of a special teams player. He can play on third down. We actually had him in the third down category because he had such good hands out of the backfield. Really good instincts. Just a really, really tough. Yeah, really good in pass protection.
Travis Homer appears to be the reincarnation, although he's not dead, I know, of Mike Davis. And doesn't he seem to be a third down pass catcher who could, again, contribute on special teams?
Position of need. You can't trust Prosise and McKissic to stay healthy. You've lost Mike Davis. Carson and Penny are your obvious number one and two, so absolutely bring a guy in to compete for the position makes perfect sense.
I'm just realizing that for the first time, they've gone against real kind of convention and not brought in any kind of quarterback, have they?
They have. They've brought in two, which we'll get into in a bit. Yeah, they've got two, which are from, one was from Canada and one's from a really small school who someone I know used to write with over at Pro Football Spot covers that state and didn't think he'd get picked up by an NFL team. So okay, that's quite interesting.
I mean, it must be the first time in a while we've not drafted a quarterback.
Well, no, we've only ever drafted two quarterbacks. It was Russell Wilson and Mr. Magoo last year. They've only ever picked up like Joe and Boykin.
And you're right. Was Boykin not drafted?
No, he was their banner undrafted free agent, which ended up well. After Travis Homo, who could be, as you say, he just does appear to be ahead of of Messi's process and McKissick immediately, just because when he gets the ball in his hands for Miami, which was again wasn't the most blow the doors off offense last couple of years. He just kind of just seems to pop a little bit. So when you watch him after Homer, the good tidings name of a big defensive tackle, DeMarcus Christmas from Florida State.
He's going to play three technique to start us out, and just like to bring him along. He's a good, tough guy, can do a lot of good stuff. We just want to develop him. We need the depth and we need the girth, you know, 300-pound plus guy.
Someone named Christmas who was born on the 4th of July, and he's a big old lad in that middle defense. Anything on Christmas apart from his seasonal name and DOB, Adam?
No, I mean, you just, again, another player, you just got to love someone of that kind of size and physicality, just a huge human being. That's one thing that I'll never quite get over, just the size of some of these people is just so absolutely flabbergasting. Yeah. And I guess you're kind of in a position now where, you know, 37th pick of the sixth round, compensatory pick, probably someone they would have got as an undrafted free agent, but, you know, maybe just a little bit cautious, so... used a free pick, basically, yep, you know, on someone else's credit card on a guy that they wanted to take a chance on.
Yep, and while Seattle beat writers and wider NFL draft analysts began to collate their Seahawks meaningless draft grades for the 2019 season, the Seahawks did, as they seem to do all the time, and kind of ruined everyone's plans and traded back into the seventh round, which they didn't have a pick after, was it the Brett Hundley trade or Shalom Luani trade last year? They didn't have one, but they traded a 2020 sixth round pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars and took a somewhat small but definitely a TD maker in the form of wide receiver John Osua from Hawaii.
Suddenness, instant separation, really good feel for sitting in zone and setting guys up. He's got really good shake off the line of scrimmage, and then he's got deceiving speed too.
John Osua had 1,343 yards in 2018 and 16 touchdowns, and even got one as a rushing threat as well. I watched all the YouTube clips I could on John Osua last night and this morning, and as I tweeted last night, he's someone, my basic one-tweet scouting report on John Osua is that he runs routes or routes like Doug Baldwin, has hands like Jermaine Kearse, and has the speed of J.D. McKissick, which is not... apart from the hands part, it's not a bad combination of them.
No, I guess this is another one they felt they had to make the trade because having brought in two wide receivers in the draft already, maybe they felt that trying to get a player like this to sign for them as an undrafted free agent would be tricky. And, you know, who really gives a shit about a sixth round draft pick next year?
Yeah.
So, you know, if that is the case, then it seems a pretty smart way to go and get your guy.
Yeah,
I mean, this strikes me as someone that would have been their banner UDFA or guy that they number one guy they wanted to get, and they just thought they had to take it out of Asua's hands,
yeah,
and pick him up themselves.
Yeah, he is quite a nice player, and he, as I tweeted to a few and sent to a few guys who like me watch wrestling, he just like a conglomeration of the Shield. He's got Seth Rollins' hair, he's got that Samoan look from Roman Reigns, and kind of the small, gritty frame of Dean Ambrose for the wrestling fans out there. That will mean absolutely nothing to you, I know, Adam, but it'll mean something to if anyone watches the wrestling and knows what the Shield does. That blonde streak in his hair did look weird. But yeah, he does look really good. He kind of seems to have that basketball NBA step off the line, which we've heard and seen so much from Doug Baldwin using it to massive benefit and success. He just seems to have that, and he just kind of that is interesting you mentioned that Champ Bailey play in the Super Bowl, because he did that a few times for Hawaii, who have a pretty nice looking quarterback as well, who could be eligible next year. So yeah, there is some cool stories in there. Gary Jennings was once a coach, but in basketball, when he was a kid back in Virginia, by one Russell Wilson. Phil Haynes became the first Wake Forest player to be selected by Seattle since one Aaron Curry back in 2009. As we say, Ugo Amadi was picked despite the school he decided to apply his collegiate trade in. But thoughts on them as an overall conglomerate, those picks on day three? It's the depth they add and what they may bring as a Boosie bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, I think overall, I'm looking down at the names and the positions and having read a lot of the scouting on most of the guys. And overall, it seems like, apart from maybe the first round pick, which, you know, maybe they would have liked Montez Sweat or someone like that, like just a slightly higher pedigree defensive end. I think overall, we've got to be pretty happy with our haul, no?
Yeah, but do you want to feel a little bit better about that Collier pick, Adam?
Go on then.
So I said, when we talked about that earlier, we mentioned that I think a few others do think as well that the team were sniped by the Chargers for Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame. I have been told by a well-placed source who delivered some pretty interesting info on who the Colts were going to take and then actually did take in the draft, that the reason that the Los Angeles Rams are NFC West rival, the NFC West champions last 2 years, is the reason they traded out of 31 is because they wanted Mr. LJ Collier. Does that make you feel any bit better?
It does. It's always good to nick one in over your rivals.
Yep.
And, you know, if he's good enough for Wade Phillips, then he's probably good enough for me. So, yeah, that certainly does help a little bit. And I'm not saying it's a bad pick at all.
No.
But, you know, if you could have added a real banner name to that, it would look like a really good draft class. And right now, I just think right now I'm happy with what we've got.
Yeah, and it does seem that Schneider and Carroll were of the opinion that the draft class at defensive end was drying up pretty soon. So I think Collier was the pick at that point for that, because I think they said after Winovich, it was pretty thin on the ground. I think Winovich went like 40 early on day two.
What's going on, guys? This is Michael Robinson, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
So yeah, it was the first time since 1981 the Seahawks selected three wide receiver in one draft, but more history must be held when thinking and assuming that means that Doug Baldwin has been replaced. Back in 2016, the year of that the Marshawn exit with the shoes hanging over the power lines, the Seahawks attacked that position three times in that draft, and the results were what, Adam? Have a guess who the Seahawks selected in 2016.
The whole draft or just running backs?
Just the three running backs the Seahawks have taken. And once you know the names, you realise that it's not all sweetness and light when you try and replace a franchise player like him.
JD McKissick?
No.
CJ Procise?
Yep. CJ Procise was a third round pick. The fifth round or sixth round pick, I think he was.
My goodness, it's going to annoy me. Did he end up at the Cowboys?
No, he ended up at the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, Collins.
Yeah, and then they also took Clemson running back Zach Brooks, who didn't make it out of training camp. So that kind of, it's a bit dangerous to presume anything from the three wide receivers selected this year that they're going to come in and replace Doug Baldwin, because someone like Doug Baldwin, which is what? To the passing game, Doug Baldwin is to what the running game Marshawn is, was, isn't he?
You said is and was and is a lot of times there, but I think I understand what you were saying. And yes, I agree.
Yeah, but there were 11 players added over the weekend. This is one of the more impressive jobs Schneider has done in the draft. They turned the 21st pick, which they traded to the Green Bay Packers, who took Darnell Savage, a safety out of Maryland, into Marquise Blair, DK Metcalf, Gary Jennings, Ugo Amadi, Ben Burke-Kervin, and Travis Homer. They made 8 trades over the weekend. This is quite a job from Schneider and his scouts and all the other parts of the puzzle that go into it, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, and they also turned Frank Clark into a player that was probably graded higher coming out of college than Frank Clark, and you got the guy for 5 years on a cheap deal, when you compare what Frank Clark's getting paid over the next 5 years, is just a no-brainer. So overall, I think it was a really positive week for the front office.
Yeah, and so, well, they're not all confirmed. Some of the undrafted free agent signs, which I've been told, and other people have been told are coming, are Utah center Loa Falemaka, Northwestern State wide receiver Jazz Ferguson, Western Kentucky tight end Mequan Dean, South Dakota State quarterback Taryn Christian, Texas cornerback Devante Davis, Baylor cornerback Derek Thomas, New Mexico wide receiver Delane Hart Johnson, British Columbia quarterback Michael O'Connor is a camp invitee. Oklahoma running back Marcellus Sutton, who has a couple of Chris Carson-like hurdle jobs on his YouTube videos, and Florida State wide receiver Nyquan Murray. But again, Adam, three more wide receivers in that crop. They really have attacked that position. And it's obviously easy to point to, Doug, but it kind of suggests that they weren't happy and not happy with the depth at that position with or without Doug Baldwin.
Sure. I mean, look, they've still only got 77 players signed to the roster, so there is plenty of space in which they can stick guys in. So I don't think they're going to be, you may as well take as many punts as possible as you want to.
Yeah.
But much more pressingly, we need to talk about your emergence into the ITK world this weekend. Stuart has been tweeting out prospective signings that actually happened and had international acclaim and queries of where he's got this information. But the big question is, do we go with rap court, which makes no sense, or court sheet, which does make more sense but is a worse name? I think rap court is the one to go for, but I'm happy to open up to the listeners. You could have Adam Courter, but that wouldn't be very good. I think rap court is where we need to go.
Especially as Adam is my brother's name as well, that kind of...
That does make it tricky, doesn't it?
I managed to source the source, who's pretty well placed. He told me where he was getting told me where they were getting their information from. And the last couple of years, it's the same person who told me that the 16 were signing Trevon Boykin a couple of years ago, and that seemed to obviously come out, although it didn't pan out as well as the team may have hoped with the amount of money they gave up in the draft. So I'm happy to go with whatever the listeners decide for my name, because I think 2020 could be somewhat similar, Adam.
Could be your year, Stu. Could be your year.
But yeah, it was quite a job, though, from Josh Snyder. Frank Clark is elsewhere. Russell Wilson is $140 million. The draft is in the back, the rearview mirror. What's up next? Bobby Wagner extension, or signing some of these still relatively big names out on the free agency market, Adam?
I reckon the signing of Ziggy Ansah will be the next bit of Seahawk news that comes through.
I think Ansah or Nick Perry will be next, so I do agree somewhat. RJ Collier just seemed to be quite similar to him. The Ansah would be that Frank Clark speed, get around the edge, flash kind of guy, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I just think some veteran presence on that line is needed, and I expect to see someone coming in to fill that.
Yeah, so rookie camp is, I think, next weekend. We will hear more from the new faces and see how they may or may not fit into 2019 and on Seattle Seahawks before the somewhat more established roll in a week or so later, I think. But that was a fun weekend from the outside in. Who, outside of Seattle, do you think had a strong banner weekend, Adam?
I didn't really get as much of a chance to follow it as close as I'd like because of work. But from all accounts, some of the kind of less heralded teams seem to have done pretty well. Miami and Washington, who came into the draft looking like they could be contenders for two of the worst teams in the league this year, both ended it with quarterbacks that could feasibly start for them for a long period of time and added depth elsewhere without giving up too much for it in neither picks or money. So I think they should both be pretty pleased with how they've done on the face of things.
I think the Redskins absolutely nailed it. Getting Dwayne Haskins and you get one of these guys from college and Terry McLaurin as well. They just seem to nail every single pick. I think the Cardinals had a pretty good draft, even though the way they treated Josh Rosen is just
more on that in a bit.
I don't understand how Steve Keim is not getting any sort a criticism for what he's done to that team. He just, yeah, I mean, I love Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is ridiculously fun to watch and could be a bit of a pain in the ass down in Arizona, but oof, my days. But yeah, I think overall, I think the Redskins could easily have an argument to having the banner weekend of all 32. But also, yeah, the Dolphins are a good shout because I think they played the Rosen deal quite well because they went from, was it 42 all the way back to 62 and still just traded it anyway. So the Cardinals lost out some value there because Steve Keim is a bit of a donut. Yeah, but I think the Redskins, Dwayne Haskins is going to be a good quarterback, and he kind of in that Gruden type offense could be quite fun to watch. And he's got, as I say, he's got Paul Richardson, who's going to be back. He's got other wide receivers, and then he obviously got Terry McLaurin as well. 2020 draft hits Las Vegas next April, but until then, Adam, it's time to dive into the bin, isn't it?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, get in the bin after a hectic, busy week and weekend in NFL world. Adam, do you want to kick things off?
Yeah, I've got a couple. The first one I'll go with is just the general thirst for news. I thought it was bad in the Premier League, but my God, in the NFL, is it awful. And you see someone like Sweat, who has a potential loss of millions and millions of dollars because someone came up with a story about a potential heart condition that turned out not to be true. But thank God it turned out not to be true just before the draft. But even just the fact that it came out before the draft, or, you know, in that period, you just felt so sorry for a guy that's just trying to earn himself some money and, you know, live a dream, that it can be done because some mystery source has released some nonsense that then gets talked about and talked about and talked about. That's bad. And yeah, also, there are definitely too many people that are paid to discuss the NFL and analyze it.
Yep.
And as a result, you get so many shite hot takes about every single thing. And I think Steve Smith on Josh Rosen was, without question, the worst. I don't know if you can embed his clip into this, but it's just such nonsense. You know, talking about how unfollowing someone on Twitter and Instagram is an indication of, you know, a guy not being a bad professional, not being a good pro. If a team's social media was flooded with photos and tweets and comments of the guy that had come in to take my job, it's highly likely I'd have unfollowed and probably blocked them.
Yeah, but also,
that's just natural human nature. And
yeah,
to conflate the idea that in doing that he's a bad guy and person, which is also stuff that he came into the draft with, character stuff, I just think it's a nonsense. And there's just such a thirst for hot takes, and there's so many people that are out there that have to come up with something alternative that we just end up having to sift through so much nonsense.
Yeah. Steve Smith was going to be one of my guys, because that was just a complete, like, I quite like Steve Smith. I think how he seems to completely dislike Michael Irvin is quite funny, seeing how often they're at close quarters with each other, how he has a distaste for how he was treated in the league. And he was, as we've talked about Doug Baldwin a lot, he was the first version of Doug Baldwin on the field. He was that gritty, smaller, wasn't really supposed to be doing, wasn't supposed to be productive and good as he was in the league. But oof, he missed every mark on that Josh Rosen take.
Drafted. We got six rounds in the next couple of days. Guys are getting replaced. You are replaceable. No one, they say in the league, the more you can do, it helps your opportunity. So now you're mad because they brought some competition in here, so you're going to try to take your ball? Well, first of all, son, it ain't your damn ball to take anyway. So you just keep playing with your phone, and you keep showing us what the stigma of you and who you were was in, at UCLA. Now you brought it to the professional level to show us. You're still going to, when things don't go your way, you're going to cry in the corner. But guess what? They're going to ship your ass on somewhere else, and you can go cry and be their problem. Listen, this is a man's game. Be a man and go against that man one-on-one. He gets 10 plays. You get 10 plays. Do your deal. Ain't nobody giving you nothing. Only thing you can get on this stage right now is a free ass whoop, and everything else you got to work hard for.
Let's say Josh Rosen is still on the roster come training camp time.
You know why he won't be on the roster? Because he ain't got enough heart to be on that roster. He got to go out there and work his ass off. He don't want to work. He wants something to
do. He was talking about how he's a guy's coming to compete for his job. Okay, yeah, he has come in to compete for his job if the position was anywhere else. But quarterback, you do not draft a quarterback number one overall to compete. Even Pete Carroll and Always Compete could not sell that one. He was clearly coming in for his job. And as we say, how Steve Keim kept a job is just incredible. The fact that Josh Rosen, the fact that Josh Rosen released the thank you video and farewell video and all that a couple of hours after that is not a coincidence. I'm unsure if he'd have done that if Steve Smith had gone after him so long, and it just showed how quickly Steve Smith was made to look a bit of a fool. But also with Josh Rosen, how he's dealt with it, everything, every little slur against his name the last couple of years, even from his collegiate coach Jim Mora, who is a bit of a dirtbag, let's be honest. He's dealt with everything remarkably well, and then after everything that Arizona Cardinals social media team and even his boss and his offensive coach, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim and whoever else in that building in Arizona have lied to Josh Rosen for 4 or 5 months, and they just, it's Josh Rosen who's the one to blame for that. It's just absolute nonsense. And Steve Smith, yeah, he was going to be one of my guys I put in the bin. Also with Josh Rosen, he left Arizona for Miami Monday morning, but that was after he took part and won MVP and got a standing ovation from the people at Larry Fitzgerald's annual softball game on Sunday night in Arizona, which just kind of shows what that fan base, kind of how they took to Josh Rosen, and also kind of he didn't kind of renege on someone who's probably a leader in that locker room even still to this day, and kind of clearly holds Josh Rosen in higher regard than his employers do, Adam.
There's just nothing to suggest from inside the locker room that there were any personal problems with the guy.
No.
So it's one of those things that has become gospel because they've just decided that that's what it is. And it's just, you do feel a bit sorry for the guy. You know, he has got a bit of a way about him that some may find unsavoury, but it's just, it's nonsense really. And you do feel a bit sorry for the bloke.
But he's now, I think someone's posted in his 4 years as a starter in college and the NFL, he's now on his seventh different offensive coordinator. Like, how is that even possible? One at the collegiate level, but he had three last year. He's now on his, obviously another one with a completely different offense than Miami, I'm guessing, which is obviously the head coach Flores is from, the Belichick New England way of doing things. I think the biggest benefactor of that, or the two, the Arizona Cardinals have another year of question marks by that team, because while they got Colin Murray, who's ridiculous fun, they still don't have a lot of clear and obvious talent, especially on the defensive side, even though they took players like Byron Murphy, which is a bit annoying. I think Miami Dolphins and Josh Rosen is the only one who's going to benefit from that, because now he's in a position where he's probably going to get the job. He's got the job for at least the next 3 or 4 years, and he could be the guy who knocks down Tom Brady in the AFC East, no matter how unlikely he is. And if he does that in the next year or so, he's going to be put on a pedestal, and probably the first person to praise him will be Steve Smith, Adam.
Yeah, and also, you know, the Dolphins have put themselves in a position where if this works, they've got a good quarterback for cheap. When they were looking at putting all their eggs in the basket of signing a guy next year, they could be in a really good position in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, one of my things is, we're not going to touch too much because obviously there's a lot of hearsay about it somewhat, even though the tape is pretty damning. I'm going to put the league back in the bin, because obviously over the weekend, I think it come out during the first round, and then it was kind of compounded even more in the second round. The audio and news clips and stuff on Tyreek Hill and as he was under investigation, and which was, I think, cleared up earlier in the week, last week. But just his, that whole Tyreek Hill situation, the NFL, because the Chiefs and their teams clearly don't have the gumption and don't want to take, just they don't seem to have that little bit knack to just get players like this, get people, get human beings, if that's the term to use for people like Tyreek Hill, out of the league. The NFL have to, at this point, surely stand up and just make it like a requisite where you cannot, if you do things like this, and you are, even if you're accused of things like this, you cannot be a part of this league. I mean, you've seen that last week Josh Gordon was tendered by the Patriots, so he's still technically under contract in the league. What he has done compared to what Tyreek Hill has been accused of is night and day. And the fact that Tyreek Hill is likelier to get a payday and play another down in the NFL compared to Josh Gordon, who has whatever mental health issues or has a substance issue, abuse issue. The fact that he's less likely to play is just incredible, and the NFL need to take it out of the 32 teams' hands, because they clearly, for the most part, and particularly that one in Kansas, seem so reluctant to do anything about it. So while it shouldn't be, it probably is time the NFL stepped up and did something about letting these players continue to have a career when other players don't, for a lot lesser indiscretions, Adam.
I think that's certainly a really good point in terms of what some people lose their jobs for and what some people get a second chance for in the NFL. It just does seem completely crazy. I'm willing to be patient and hear what news comes through, and but before we start absolutely saying what should and shouldn't happen to someone. But let's be quite clear. I think the NFL have an opportunity here that if the Tyreek Hill stuff does get confirmed, there is only one thing that should be happening to Tyreek's career, and that should be that it ends. And I think the NFL have the chance to make that happen. So let's see what happens before anything else. That's partly because I think I'm not sure we can afford a libel case. We don't, certainly since we've got the Patreon, I'm not sure we've got enough cash coming in to pay for it.
It is all alleged. It's,
but I think you're right that certainly if the alleged news does come true, it should be the easiest decision the NFL have ever had to make.
Yeah, but also at the same time, don't really trust them to make it. Anyone else for the bin for you, Adam?
That's me done. I'm going to be in the bin if I don't finish this podcast soon, because I'm getting strong looks.
One more thing for the bin quickly before we wrap up. A section of Seahawks fans can get in the bin. The readiness to just give up and move on from players is incredibly annoying. We saw it a lot over the last 18 months with Sherman, Chancellor, Avril to a lesser extent, and obviously most recently Earl Thomas, and we've seen it again this weekend with Doug Baldwin. As we said about Doug Baldwin in this podcast, he's, as I put on Facebook, he's as important to this team, arguably, as important to this team as anyone, but not named Russell Wilson to this team. And how quickly people can just kind of go, anyway, we've got this guy from West Virginia who hasn't done anything in the NFL. He'll be fine, don't worry about it. It's just really annoying. It kind of happens in football to a certain extent, where, especially with my club, Coventry City, we kind of clamour for players because they put something on Twitter, or they do this, they do that, when really talent and kind of things should win out. But it's just an annoying quirk, I guess, Adam.
I could not agree more. I think that is very well put.
We are going to try and be doing some more podcasts as the NFL and kind of slows down somewhat over the next couple of months. There's a few people we do want to try and get on and talk to on the podcast. So as well as giving me an ITK name, as Adam said, we do want to, if you have anyone you would like us to talk to, or if anyone you'd like to hear from on this podcast, do get in touch on the usual means, on Facebook, on the Pedestrian Podcast, or UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Twitter. It is at Seahawkers UK. As I said, the team will be back at VMAC with rookie camp and then whatever OTAs over the next few weeks. If anything happens with Doug Baldwin and or extensions for other Seahawks players, we will probably convene. But apart from that, we probably will just try and get some different people on, Adam, before it all kicks back up at the end of June, July, really, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Bring it on.
Yeah, so until next time, enjoy your off-season and start booking your trips for the 2019 season to London, Wembley, White Hart Lane, and obviously most prominently Seattle. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
Well, I was surprised that he came into our interview with his shirt off.
That's correct. And so Aaron basically got him to take his shirt, Aaron Einline, you know, basically got him to take his shirt off before he went into the interview at the Crown Plaza. That's pretty funny.
You said he can really fire his feet.
Yeah, we're serious. He did. He came in with his shirt off. And it kind of pissed me off, so I took my shirt off, too. Not for long, though.
Yeah. Too long.
Much longer than that.